You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Never a good sign. I don't know what it is. It sounds different. Why does it sound different? Nothing's been touched. I'm looking for something that's out of place, but I'm not seeing anything. Well, doesn't matter. Good morning on a Friday. Mike McNamara for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Went down to San Clemente yesterday to... This is killing me. It's my right ear, too. So that means, like, something's amiss someplace. Hold on. See if that works. Yes, it worked! Yes! Alright. Anyhow. Honestly, it's like, so you do radio, right? And you have a headset on, so when I talk, I hear myself. And if there's anything wrong with that, for instance, if when you do, you know, like you're doing a remote and you're sending it back to the studio, well, there's a series of buttons that have to get pushed, right? So if there's somebody back there, my voice and my feed has to get fed with, to them, right? So there's a button that you push that feeds it to, like, all the other people. There's another button that feeds it back to me. If they push the button that's fed back to me, so I'll hear my voice, and it's delayed about a tenth or a quarter of a second. So instead of you hearing yourself speak, you hear yourself again, and it's impossible for me to speak like that. I can't do that. I just have to sit there and shut up. I can't talk. I'll fall off the chair. I can't function like this. And I was experiencing a little bit of that. So anyway, that's right. A look behind the scenes of the incredible production that is All Marine Radio. So good morning to you on a Friday. I was talking to somebody and, somebody said to me, "Hey Mac, I have a question for you. I have a friend and they wanted to know your background. Like, do you have a PhD in mental health?" Or I said, "No. In fact, I don't even think that, you know, I know Maslow, so I think at some point I took a psychology class, but I would have to go actually look in my college transcripts to make sure I did, because I don't even know if I did." I said, "So what's the question?" "Well, they want to know your credentials for doing what you do." I said, "Well, I've been dealing with traumatic things since I was about 20. I've been a leader since about that time. Is that not enough? Do I need to be formally educated so that you'll believe that what I say has validity? And they said, well, I certainly don't, but I think that that my friend believes that. That, oh, he can't have anything to say because he's not a PhD. He doesn't even have a master's. So, you know, I thought about it. I think about this kind of stuff. So, I've interviewed people for over 3 years now on this radio program. Is that a master's in something? Well, of course it's not. It's just your experience. Interesting. Interesting. So if I went to school for a year and I studied books and took a test, then you would believe what I say, or at least I'd be, oh, well, he's credentialed. He knows. So I have to say I've got an issue with that. But I will say this. So what the next question that this person asked me was, what do you think if you broke post-traumatic winning down? You know, what makes it go? I said, you know, I've thought about that. And the two things that make post-traumatic winning unique and what makes it go is, number one, it tackles a problem of ignorance. Now, ignorance can really upset some people when you say, well, you're ignorant. There's two forms of ignorance. One is a willful ignorance, when you choose to be that way. The other is the state that most of us are in before we know something, right? You're ignorant. It's not like you're stupid. You know, it's not like you can't comprehend something. It's that you don't know about it. And I would offer my own example that I've shared with you before on the program, and that is this. In September of 1993, a helicopter crashes into where my Marines are, out in 29 Palms. And the pilot's decapitated, the co-pilot's crushed to death, and we're trying to save the other two Marines that there, and they die. I could tell you, that's a well below average experience. The rest of the day, you're looking for body parts, and you're putting all that stuff together, and you're talking to Marines who are struggling with what they saw and whatnot. And my gunny comes up, and that's when he looks at me and says, you're not going to get over this. Now, I didn't know that. I mean, I'm a relatively bright human being. I didn't know that, though. So I was completely ignorant of what things happen in your life as you deal with significant trauma in your life. I didn't know. I never had a conversation with anybody like that, like the one I had that day. And that really opened kind of the door for me to be, first of all, sensitized to it, and then always be inquisitive about it and look for it. Be a little kind of sponge about learning, about living with this thing that he told me I would never, ever get over. And so post-traumatic winning does that. And I would say nobody that comes to post-traumatic winning class walks out of there not better for having come to it. And I don't care if they're a PhD. They'll learn in that class, I promise you. And so there's an education component to that addresses the ignorance that we all have because we don't know, right? We don't know what's in store for us as you know, we live through trauma. And I talk about trauma being a hand grenade that goes off, like, in a room. And you can't see, like, a real hand grenade, so there's no big fireball, right? Dust and debris everywhere, and you can't see, and it's dark and whatnot. And you know, and that's kind of like what happens when trauma comes into your life. Now, a lot of people grope their way through it. Maybe a lot of people close their eyes and walk through it. A lot of people turn around and walk away. But in the back, in the corner, there's a door that leads you to a path to a greater life. If you have somebody to guide you through the smoke and the debris and all that, you can get there. Now, you may stumble into it. You may stumble into it like I have. And I would consider myself very fortunate. But if we can help each other get there through education, because we, you know, you've heard me say this before, but trauma, nobody gets out unscathed. Everybody's going to get touched by it. So if we can be there for each other, that's a good thing, right? So what post-traumatic winning does is it addresses an area of ignorance that we as humans have. And so that's the first part of what makes it go. Okay, and what makes it unique and special, because there isn't another class like this. I know, because look, I'm a consumer, first and foremost. I'm somebody who's lived with through that stuff. So I got interested to help myself. Right? And then after I had interviewed so many people, I thought, you know, I've learned so much, I need to share this. Okay, so that's the first part. The first part is the addressing the ignorance part. And it's not willful ignorance, it's just ignorance about a certain part of life. That's what makes post-traumatic winning unique. The second part I would tell you that makes post-traumatic winning unique is the isolation, addressing isolation. The longer I've done this, the more and more, right, I am convinced, right, that isolation is as big of a problem as ignorance, and it explains why we lose more veterans to suicide than we do in combat. Think about that. Unit goes, unit fights. They'll lose more people when they come home to suicide than they lost fighting the bad guy. How can that be? What explains that? Well, I'll tell you what explains it. The first part is ignorance. Nobody really sits down with them and explains, this is what you've gone through. This is what's going to happen. This is what you need to do to counteract these things. Okay? And so they don't know about it. They get offered medication and talk therapy. And most of them stop going to both. And then they isolate themselves. And if you combine ignorance with isolation, throw in alcohol and a failed relationship, throw in financial instability, and you're really just waiting for the right permutation of those circumstances for something really bad to happen. So what makes post-traumatic winning different? Post-traumatic winning deals with both of those issues in a very direct, very blunt way. Now, the response is, that sounds too simple. And the response to that is, leadership isn't simple. It's hard. But I will tell you this. If you have somebody to talk to, and if you have somebody who cares about you, you don't face the door that, you know, that goes down the hallway of destructive behavior. You have an outlet. You're connected. And if you're part of something good, then you'll get through it. Fact, fact, fact. So the two problems are ignorance and isolation. Those are the two big problems. So if you can educate somebody about what's happened to them and the path that they'll go down and, you know, what's there for them, if you do that, right, and they can understand and they get inquisitive and they begin to read and they begin to understand, And then you address the isolation piece. You have somebody to talk to, right? And that's why you can see post-traumatic winning is not a military thing. It's for everybody. It's for everybody. And so, is this easy? No, it's hard. Is the solution simple? I wouldn't say it's simple. I think it's pretty straightforward. Do you need a PhD? Well, I would say this. And I'll quote a whole bunch of people that I've spoken to. Yeah, we spend a lot of money and all we seem to be getting is more suicide. Now, I don't blame the behavioral health people for that. But again, if your solution is hitting the mark, it would have an effect, yes? So what's wrong with the solution? Well, this is my opinion of what's wrong with the solution. The solution has to be a tribal solution. So the solution for the Marine Corps, right, has to be Marine-like. For it to have, in my opinion, for it to have credibility. And for it to resonate. So, and again, I'll use myself as an example. Why was that advice, you're never going to get over it, so powerful? Well, it was so powerful because of the person who gave it to me. Lance Y, my company Gunny. And when he told me that, I didn't doubt it for one second, even though I got irritated with him when he said it to me. But I took it to the bank because, right, my company Gunny told me. And I had nothing but respect and admiration for him. And so to me, the messenger is important. The context of the message is important. All of that goes into communicating with somebody. And so when you fight isolation, the messenger is important. So anyway, I thought I'd relate. What does make post-traumatic winning so special? Well, it makes it special because, in a very, very direct way, it confronts those two issues. Ignorance that we all share, not willful ignorance. It's just one of those things you don't know about. You don't have a need to know until you have a need to know. And then you don't know. And if you're not fortunate to cross paths with somebody who does know, you flail with it by yourself. And if you go to, somebody says you should go see a therapist and you go and you don't hit it off and you quit going, then you're alone dealing with it by yourself. And that's no bueno. And then the other piece is what follows is the isolation piece. So post-traumatic winning deals with that. And that's what makes it special. And I don't think you need a PhD to figure that out. Now, if you want to brief other PhDs, maybe you need a PhD. But I wouldn't have a problem briefing what I do to PhDs. In fact, I've done it a few times. And you know what they say? The beauty of what you do lies in the direct message and you as a messenger. Can you clone yourself? And I say, yeah, I can clone myself. There's other guys like me that can do this. And then the response is, you need to do that because your message needs to be heard. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you today. The other thing I'd share with you is post-traumatic winning, going to the United States Air Force Academy. Yeah, I talked to them yesterday. And so on August 21st, yeah, in Colorado Springs. And I'm excited because one of the guys who's there, I think he's an instructor there, is one of the sons of one of my best friends, Pierre Lamoureux. His son's name is Jacques, Captain Jacques Lamoureux. Jacques played hockey at the Air Force Academy. And so, and Jacques went through he went through his own struggles in his life. And so, I'm hopeful that Jacques will introduce the post-traumatic winning. And again, he played hockey and I coached hockey. I never coached him, But you've heard his two sisters on the program. Monika Jocelyn played for the U.S. Women's Olympic Hockey Team. And so you heard them on the program. So pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. And the other cool thing was I was talking to a mass sergeant by the name of Lear yesterday. And, you know, just, you know, they've checked out post-traumatic winning and read about it. And they're extremely excited to host it. They're like, so are we looking for something non-traditional, right? Something that will kick off, you know, what we're doing in a big way. I said, well, you called the right human being, man. Because I said, look, 8 months ago, this was a proposition. Every statement I make was, I believe that. Now it's no longer a proposition. I can tell you for a fact that if you do these things, this will happen. And then to hear the excitement in their voice, right? Because this problem is such a tough one. So anyway, pretty exciting stuff. Also went down to San Clemente yesterday and did some op checks, as I get ready to do a post-traumatic winning for 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines. I want to say on the 23rd. So, and then after that, headed for the East Coast last week in August, headed to back to Camp Lejeune to police up, a battalion that was deployed and some Marines that hadn't seen it. So do that. Get a chance to hopefully round table about the counseling piece of all this. And I told the 2nd Division, hey, y'all are making history. Y'all are making history. Because everything you tell me, I use as best practices and give to other people. And then they go down that road. So you ought to be rightfully proud. And he said, and second to nobody. Right? Because, you know, the work you're doing is incredibly important. So I went down to San Clemente. Getting ready to hang out with 2-5 for a little bit and do post-traumatic winning. So exciting stuff. And hopefully more to follow. So anyway, good morning to you, Whitney Houston. It is Friday. Sings the national anthem. The chef's going to join us today. We're going to get to hear about his week with his brother and sister. So we'll hear about that and talk about food. And good morning to you. This is dedicated to my friends at the Air Force Academy. Some of them have been working on getting me there for a while, so fired up. That's right. I got to learn the song. I got to relearn the song. Off We Go Into the Wild Blue Yonder, right? I got to relearn that song. I used to know it when I was a kid, Right. Flying high into the sky. Something spouting a flame from under. Attaboy, give him the gun. Something like that. Yeah, I gotta work on that song. I don't know. This dedicated to them though. I'm fired up to come and help and share the wisdom of all the different veterans that have been on this program and what they've taught me, starting with my gunnery sergeant, Lance Y. Guys like Jack Riley, guys like Bob Nielsen, guys like Jeremiah Workman. I mean, all the different people that have come on here and made me a little bit smarter about this beast that gets unleashed in people's lives, and then we all have to live with. So, this is dedicated to the airmen at the United States Air Force Academy. Excited to come see you all and to do some work with you.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, Infant Soldier, Infantry, Young Soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, CFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. if you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country, we care about what happens to everyone. Brain Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Talked to a buddy of mine yesterday, Brian Fitzgibbons. He goes, Mac, I really like the way you do the weather. The weather. I said, are you screwing with me, Fitz? He says, no. I said, I know you are. He goes, no, I think it's funny. Well, whatever. Brian Fitzgibbons. Fitz. Currently, sunny in 86 in the nation's capital. It's warm there. I saw the president talking to people before he gets on his plane. I mean, President Trump, have you ever seen a president more in your life in front of the camera than him? Holy smokes, man. Every day, right? Just about every day. But I'll tell you what, it is better than watching Sarah Sanders out there or any of the rest of them do that thing. That was painful. So anyway, watching him this morning, he was sweating his face off. Yeah, I don't know how, honestly, I don't know how he doesn't, like, wipe the sweat off his face. Yeah, I don't... Got all that makeup on? I guess it's discipline, but... Anyway. Alright, so, hot in D.C. Must be humid there, too. Sunny in 86. Mostly sunny, 92 at Camp Lejeune down the coast. Sunny in 83 out in 29 Palms, so it's cooled off there a little bit. Camp Pendleton, clouds in 64. Hawaii, dark cloudy in 78. The home of... the lava dogs of the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines. Okinawa. 4 weather alerts now. Now we got to look at that. Mostly cloudy, dark, and 83. What are the 4 weather alerts about in Okinawa? Well, I'm going to tell you that. There's a high wave warning. There's a thunderstorm advisory, a heavy rainfall advisory, and a gale advisory. So, yeah, they got a lot of wind, they got a lot of rain, and they've got high surf. So, yeah, stay out of the water. That's in Okinawa. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, in the city of Ramadi, it is 103 under sunny skies. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, where it can be over 100 degrees when there's no sun out, which is always interesting, it is dark, cloudy, and 101. That's right. No sign of the sun, and it's 101. Yeah, don't let any part of that. And then in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is cloudy and 66 degrees. And the weekend's supposed to be absolutely beautiful. 79 today, 80 tomorrow on Saturday, and then 78 on Sunday. Come on, man. That's straight up perfect. That is a look at your weather. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check some news headlines. And then the chef joins us at 9:05. We'll talk about food with him as we do on a Friday. Next week, a couple programming notes for everybody. General Zinni sent me an email and said, I'd love to come on and talk about discipline. So fired up about that. The Burning Bush, as he's known on All Marine Radio. That's right. And he's been the Burning Bush since about 1990. That's a long time to wear that name. But he is. I mean, he's, one of my heroes, Tony Zinni. So, and every bit deserved. Every bit deserved. So excited to talk about discipline with him. And then a woman by the name of Anne Germain. She is coming on, and we're going to talk about sleep. I saw an article, I think it's Stars and Stripes, maybe, military.com article, but talked about sleep and how veterans are plagued with sleep disorders. And as somebody who was awake at 3:30 this morning and couldn't go back to sleep, so I started calling all my friends. So Nielsen hears from me, Furness hears from me, my son John hears from me. So he calls me back later and goes, dude, really? Why are you awake at 3:15? I said, because God woke me up. He starts laughing. He said, again? I said, yep. He likes me. He wakes me up. And so, so sometimes I can go back to sleep. So we're going to talk to Anne Germain about that. She's a PhD and doing research into it, so I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah, I am. So she'll be on next week. And then I think Alex Hollings will come on. He'll wax eloquent on Monday. So should be a cool week of shows next week. And I'm working on another battlefield study. So stay tuned for more news on that. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and hope in the end of this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast.
The one and only Peyton Davis. Email Mac, you'll lose the fight against the PhDs. My own instinct is that you threaten the Rice Bowl. And if you do, God help you, my friend. I'm not threatening anybody, man. I'm just trying to help. So, but I realize there's an element to it, to that. But again, I think the more mature of the behavioral health people, and I use that generically to include everybody, they say, you know what, we need your voice to say these things because you make us more effective. Boom. And when we say these things, they don't resonate because we're not a part of your culture. And that's a problem. That's a straight up problem. So that's why the messengers are important. So anyway. All right, we'll check the news. Top stories in early bird, not in early bird, but in Stars and Stripes today. Progress is made in identifying the remains returned from North Korea last year, according to the Department of Defense. More than a year after North Korea returned 55 cases of remains, 11 American troops have been identified and more are expected in the coming weeks, according to the agency overseeing the process. The remains were flown to Osan in July, fulfilling part of the agreement reached by President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un at their first summit on June 12, 2018 in Singapore. The cases were then transferred to another aircraft destined for Joint Base Pearl Harbor, Hickam, Hawaii, where the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency, or DPAA, began the lengthy identification process. DPAA has identified 11 servicemen from those remains, and we expect more than 20 additional IDs in the coming weeks. So that would be 31 out of 55 containers of remains. Several families have found closure with their long-missing loved ones that have been identified among the remains, including Army Master Sergeant Charles McDaniel and PFC William Jones, who were the first to be announced in September of last year. So anyway, story that's in the news regularly now. Next story. And this is one of those stories. Southwest Airlines flew the remains of a Vietnam airman home to Dallas. The pilot of the aircraft was his son. How about that? Brian Knight was 5 years old when he waved goodbye to his father from Dallas's Love Field. He never saw him again. The year was 1967, and Roy Knight Jr. was heading to war. The pilot reported to the Udorn Royal Thai Air Force Base in January. By May, after flying nearly daily combat missions, Knight was missing. His plane was shot down over enemy territory in Laos. It was another 7 years before his family found out he'd been killed. And on Thursday, 45 years after that, they finally received closure. Knight's remains recovered near his plane's crash site more than 5 decades after it went down, were flown to Honolulu, to Oakland, California, and from Oakland back to Dallas, where the family greeted the Southwest flight as it arrived. Brian Knight, the son who watched his dad leave to fight in Vietnam, was also the man who flew him home. The pilot of the flight from California to Texas, which landed at Love Field, the last place they saw each other. Wow. Quote, "When I first got the call, it was almost surreal," Brian Knight said in an interview with Southwest Airlines. "I really don't think it would ever happen. Wow, you know, he's really coming home." We're going to be able to bring him back. And we're going to have a place that we can honor him. His older brother, Roy Knight III, told the local Weatherford Democrat newspaper that the end of the half-century journey was hard to fathom. "You have these competing emotions. You're happy this is resolved," he said. "But there's that uncomfortable feeling of change and coming to grips with reality. And there's also immense, intense sadness that comes whenever you contemplate the loss of someone that's important to you." How cool is that? You know, in Dallas, when we went on leave from Afghanistan, you go through Dallas. Everybody goes through Dallas. And I think everyone went through Dallas. Or at least if you're coming to the West Coast, and I think the center part of the United States you do. I think if you're going to the East Coast, you go to Atlanta. I'm not sure if my memory is good on that. But anyway, when you land, right, there's fire trucks out there. Right? Big American flag hanging, and then, you know, they shoot their water cannons in the air. And it might not be special to anybody else, but special to us, right? You know, you haven't been home in 6 months, and, you know, you've been doing the work that you do, and all of a sudden, you know, you see some small gesture like that, and it means the world to you. Then in the airport, you know, there's a commercial they show on TV where you see people walking through the airport, and then you see, you know, Marines and soldiers and sailors and airmen walking through this. There's only one ramp that was used for this. And so, you know, we're walking down it, and it was like the commercial. You know, the people down below they stop what they're doing and they start clapping. And you're not prepared for it. right? Because you're grabbing your stuff, and you've got to catch a connecting flight, and, you know, you've forgotten about the commercial, and you don't think it's really going to apply to you anyway. And then you go down this escalator, and there's all these people standing there. A lot of them from the USO. So Dallas has a lot of experience in how to welcome people home. So anyway, good on them. And I mean, what a story. Can you imagine flying your father's remains home? Unbelievable. The USS Porter sails into the Black Sea as the Navy boosts patrols in the region. The destroyer Porter arrived in the Bulgarian Black Sea port of Varna on Friday, making the sixth time this year the Navy has sent a warship into the region. The naval operations we conduct in the Black Sea with our allies and partners maintain the strong relationships that are necessary for regional stability, said Vice Admiral Lisa Franchetti, the 6th Fleet commander, in a statement. So, again, take that, Vlad. Us operating in the region. For Marine Corps Times, there's one article, not so much about the Marine Corps, but that we've been following, and that is Turkey and the United States appear closer to establishing a safe zone in Syria. What does that mean? So this is an Associated Press article written out of Beirut, saying the two countries have said that they agreed to form a joint operations center to coordinate and manage its establishment, that is the safe zone. The vague announcement issued at the end of 3 days of Turkish-U.S. talks in Ankara also appeared to avert for now a possible new Turkish incursion into Syria, which the United States was, you know, desperately seeking to avoid because, you know, many of the Syrians fought for the United States as we attempted to run ISIS out of its caliphate. So that's not a small deal. And especially, again, our relationship with Turkey, you know, is a strained one, to say the least. So, interesting. The chef going to join me here in about 10 minutes. Bob Nielsen said, just like Vietnam. I should get him on and ask him about that. Where they flew into. Oh, I think he's being facetious. Because that's not how they came home from Vietnam. They tended to come home through San Francisco, my understanding. Most did. And got told, take your uniform off. Right? Might want to put a hat on. And don't talk about it. Yeah, a little bit different. You know, again, the thing with Vietnam veterans is the nation grew up on them. And that's why all of us, every time I speak, you know, I always ask, are there any Vietnam veterans here? Thank you for what you went through. Because the nation grew up on you. And even people that are adamantly against to our wars, they don't take it out on us anymore. You know, very rarely do you hear a story of, you know, somebody getting treated poorly. So we can never say thank you to Vietnam veterans enough for what they went through and how they got treated. Because, you know, that's tough. You know, and again, I get emotional talking about it. I think you can tell me talking about going through the airport there. I can't remember if I was going or coming. I think I was going home. I'd landed in Orange County at John Wayne Airport, and I'd gone to McDonald's in the airport, and I was done eating. I was leaning up against the wall, and I think I was just going through stuff on my phone, because you had cell service, right? What the hell? And this woman came up to me, and I'm just standing there. I'm in my tan utilities, and I'm back against the wall, and I'm minding my own business. She came up to me. She said, "Hi, how are you?" And I said, "I'm fine, thanks. How are you?" And she just said, "You know," she just said, "Welcome home." And I said, "Thank you." it's good to be home. She said, are you going or are you coming? I said, no, I'm coming home for a couple weeks. And then she said, can I give you a hug? And I said, sure. So that's my experience, right? And then everybody's so nice to you on the airplane. They see you in uniform and they know you're going or coming from the war. And everybody just, you know, if they have a room in first class, they give it to you. You know, the Vietnam guys didn't get any of that. Not only did they not get that, I mean, some got spit on and screamed at and all that shit. So, I mean, you can see, I mean, you come home to your country that you've been fighting for and you get treated, you know, you get treated great. They did not. Anyway, top five stories in Early Bird. One, a computer glitch delays the pay raises for nearly 7,000 airmen. What the hell? You'll get your money, boys and girls. Don't worry about it. Two, Air Force pauses flight ops over more than 100 C-130s after atypical cracks were being found. The C-130, man, that's a workhorse, right? That's a workhorse, so that's not a small deal. Number three, U.S. Secretary of Defense visits South Korea as region faces challenges. Mark Esper traveling around. He's in Mongolia the other day, so he's visiting some allies now that he's confirmed as the actual Secretary of Defense. And so he's been around the region, which is a good thing. Number four, Trump names retired SEAL Vice Admiral new Acting Director of National Intelligence via a tweet. In a 1-2 punch, President Donald Trump announced via Twitter both the nation's number two intelligence official would resign and that he had named a new Acting Director of National Intelligence. Current National Counterterrorism Center Director Joseph McGuire, a retired United States Navy SEAL, Vice Admiral. So congratulations, everybody, on those appointments. Number five, how U.S. Special Operations troops did in shooting tactical competition with Latin American countries. Now, I'll tell you from the headline that they did well. Because when they don't do well, the headline is, right, Mexican Army outshoots Marines. Wah! Right? So the fact that headline's absent tells me that they did well. For the past 15 years, small groups of special operations troops from the United States and Latin America have met each year for a tactical competition while their senior leaders traded lessons learned and developed better ways to provide security, counter narcotics trafficking, and handle disaster response across U.S. Special Operations Command South. Military Times spoke recently with the U.S. Director of Fuerzas Comando Competition. All right. Let's get to the results. But this year, hosted by Chile, included a new event that focused on Special Operations Forces skill sets. The competitors were dropped off the coast in the Pacific Ocean in 54-degree water and had to swim to rubber Zodiac boats through a cross-ocean movement and then commando swim to the beach. Here are the rankings of the soft teams that participated. Oh, we didn't do very good. One, Colombia. Well, they better do good. All right, number two, Chile, the host. Number three, Ecuador. Number four, Panama. Number five, Honduras. Number six, United States. What? Number seven, El Salvador. So there you have it. We're number six. That's not going to probably be turned into a chant anytime soon. We're number six. We're probably not going to go there. Overseas operations. Nothing I would report to you. Yeah, zero. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the Shuffle, join us. And more of All Marine Radio coming up here on this, what day of the week of it? It's Friday. On this Friday, again, pretty motivating. Headed to the Air Force Academy, coming up in a couple, less than 2 weeks, in about 10 days. So I'm fired up about that. And get a chance to do post-traumatic winning again and preach the gospel, man. Preach the gospel of what it is to live with it and to challenge them to go change other people's lives. So one of the best things I've ever done in my life. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available, and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends, these are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.